Have you tried changing your health year on year, resolving that this year things are going to be different, but nothing seems to change? Oftentimes, when things are not changing, we are following many wellness myths and not looking at the full picture, including our nutrition, recovery, stress management, leaving out mind-body connection. I want to introduce you to Wellness Redefined, a new podcast from Rufilion Media that's here to dispel all your myths about wellness and fitness while sharing stories of how we've redefined what it means to be healthy. On each episode, we'll be talking to experts from all walks of life who will share their own unique wellness journey and offer their perspective. I am your host, Tamika Rochester, founder and CEO of Harlem Cycle, a premier wellness space in New York City with a focus on indoor cycling. I've been an advocate for wellness since as early as I can remember. So if this sounds like something that could help change your life, go ahead and pause the show you're listening to and subscribe to Wellness Redefined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, folks. Welcome to Inclusive Collective, where we bring you news and analysis of the latest in people and workplace culture and share stories and learnings of inclusive people, organizations, and innovation. I'm your co-host, Rob Hadley, a people and culture strategist specializing in DE&I and people analytics, and I'm joined by my friend, Nadia Butt, a workplace culture strategist and talent development consultant. Nadia, good to see you.
Hi, Rob. How are you this week?
I am fantastic. How are you doing? How's everything?
Everything's, you know, decent. Not terrible, you know. That's always a good sign.
That's the bar.
That's the bar.
Hey, I hadn't thought of this, but you reflected on a lot of the things last week that are happening in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And then a couple of weeks ago, you were excited about Jon Stewart coming back to The Daily Show. Have you been watching it?
I have been watching. You know what's funny? I don't even know if I told you. I got rid of my cable at the end of last year. Remember when I upped my internet?
trade-off.
I upped my internet because I just wasn't really watching cable, channels and stuff. I have all of the subscriptions to everything online streaming-wise. So I was like, I don't need cable. But now I'm like, where do I watch Jon Stewart? And well, what's interesting is Comedy Central releases it the next day for free. Uh-huh. Yep. So I've been watching it there. And then, of course, clips and stuff here and there on social.
Nice.
I love him. How's your wife feeling about it? I know your wife was hesitant because was he a vaccination?
No, he was a Wuhan lab leak guy. He was really into Wuhan. I mean, is that still true, though? That's a 50-50
meaning
thing.
That he believes. Okay.
Oh yeah, he definitely believes it. But I would say that the Republican nominee for president says it's a guarantee that it came from
there. You
Wuhan.
Go. So
there you
that's
go.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. 50-50.
Are you watching it?
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm a big fan. Definitely like it. Obviously, you know my feelings on ageism, and so his first show out of the box was that Joe Biden is old, and I was like, yeah. I mean, it's not that he's not old, right?
Yeah,
it's
he's older.
I don't like to be. I don't like to tell people when to get off the stage, right?
Yeah,
I think that's their
decision.
And I think that there's people that's older people can be completely capable, right?
Totally.
Doesn't matter what your age is,
right?
For the task at hand. So, but the commentary is very funny. So anyway, I'm glad that you found it a day later. You can watch it a day later.
Yeah, I watch the clips the night if I'm awake. I'm usually not awake, but then first thing in the morning. Also, he's the podcast. There's the Daily News podcast edition that you can listen to.
I only listen to this podcast. I don't listen to any other podcast.
Of course.
Yeah. No room for it.
Yeah. That's
what do we got today, Nadia?
All right. Well, Rob, so this week on Inclusive Collective, the fight over gig worker pay rules and the North Face pays people to learn about privilege.
Ooh.
We'll also be joined by Angela Howard, CEO of Call for Culture. And later, we'll rant and rave, of course. But first, let's get to the deets.
All right. Let's lead it off, Nadia. You sent me this article, so you're responsible for this. I said I would do it, and then I immediately regretted it. Because
we fall
itself
into this category.
Well, unfortunately, some days. Yeah. But it's just so wonky, right? So let me try to summarize this in a few lines. So the Washington Post had this long article about the fight over Labor Department rules that were put in place by the Biden administration to tighten the process around companies classifying their workers, right? Companies want to classify gig workers as contractors as much as possible, so they don't have to pay overtime, they don't have to provide benefits, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So a number of the companies and organizations banded together this past week to file a lawsuit to try to stop this from taking effect. So this has been going on since the emergence of ride-sharing companies in the Obama administration. The rules really allow the Department of Labor to punish companies that misclassify workers for their own benefit. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you for the wonky article. Do you have thoughts on this?
I mean, I don't really, only because it's just so complicated. Like I was rereading the article, and I'm not going to like sit here and pretend that I know how nuanced it is. I think of like all the rules and the employment laws that are considered in these types of decisions, the considerations for things like benefits, pay, overtime, etc. So I think it's interesting, though, because I would imagine gig workers, and, you know, many times, like, we fall into that category. So you imagine, like, gig workers enjoy, like, the flexibility of being independent, right? But they also appreciate benefits. And oftentimes when you purchase benefits on your own as an independent contractor, it's very expensive, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then employers, like, they enjoy the use of independent contractors, right? For various reasons. One because maybe there's just a variety of choice, and then also they don't have to pay benefits, right? Mm-hmm. But also, I think employers dislike how there are rules around employment, specifically around the number of hours or how often and the frequency and et cetera. So it's all just really tricky and confusing, but I did like to draw attention to it because I think it's important, especially if you are an employer and you're working with gig workers, or you are a gig worker and you're trying to understand what your rights are. So I'll pause there for your...
Well, you did a good job, and I am going to pretend like I understand the nuance for a second. No, just kidding. I'm not.
You and your employment law background.
Yeah. You know, so you did a good job. And so those are the issues, right? And I think that, I guess my feelings are, we really get locked into these shitty structural models in our economy in terms of working, right? Mm-hmm. So Uber says in this case that if this happens, or if these rules go into effect, that up to 2/3 of people can't be drivers. But, you know, you think about it and you're like, well, why is that, right? It's like, why do you have a labor model that's so fragile?
Yeah.
It only works if you pay people a very little amount and you give them no benefits, right? So,
you
know, it would suck. I think it would suck if Uber didn't exist, and, you know, it'd probably bother me less if DoorDash didn't exist, but I know others feel differently about that. But
listen, there's a convenience factor to a lot of these things.
It's out of my price range, but maybe not in that case, right? Like, maybe the old model where, you know, people drove you around, they did a bad job, they got lost, they took forever to show up, right? They're called taxi drivers, but they had unions and they had benefits, right? So maybe we were onto something with right? We always get locked into these structural models and we're like, well, we can't change it because then we wouldn't have Uber. It's like, well, maybe we should, you know?
Yeah. Or we can have them, but like you said, they maybe just like, we need to offer different types of, we just have to be more considerate and mindful, right? Of like a working living wage and benefits and things that really are required for a person to like live in the US, right? And thrive. So yeah, I think that's a fair point, is like the model of how these things work. But it is a capitalist society. And that's just like, that is just how, without exploitation of people, that's just how things go, apparently.
Whoa. You've gone too far.
I've gone too far.
What is next?
All right. So last week, the giant clothing retailer, The North Face, which like I feel like everyone now has either that or a Patagonia jacket. Anyways, The North Face put out a program where they are offering customers 20% off if they take a racial inclusion course. It's a 1-hour long course called Allyship in the Outdoors. It discusses concepts like race, of course, race in the outdoors, lack of access to the outdoors, white privilege, and of course, allyship. At the end of the course, after you take it, you're offered a 20% discount. So why did they do this? Well, they pointed to a 2017 study, which found that 26.2% of Black people and 25.7% of Asian people spend time in the countryside, compared to 44.2% of white people spend in the countryside. And this was a study that was based in England. The findings included quote, people of color are less likely to go climbing, hiking, skiing, snowboarding, and trail running. And people of color are three times more likely than white people to live in an area that is nature deprived, end quote. Reactions.
I wonder what it is in Utah. I think the percentage of white people doing outdoors activity in Utah is something like 95%.
So, okay.
yeah. I don't know what's going on in England, but you know, I start not just by saying how jealous I am of whoever thought of this and whoever implemented it.
Tell me more.
As a person that existed, and I spent a lot of time in big companies for many years, trying to get executives to take even tiny risks just to dip their toe in the water of anything that could be controversial. You know, it should not be understated how great of an accomplishment this is in terms of influencing. And so then for the executives and the leaders of North Face, it's inspiring, right? So it's 2024. We know that they're going to get a lot of backlash, right, from the Bigotry Coalition, which we've talked about on this show. And despite knowing this, they move forward. And of course, you know, if you Google the story, there's a ton of backlash already happening from folks writing about this. So now on the merits, they're correct, right? So we have relationships with people on this show. We've had people on the show that have made their case about the lack of access to the outdoors. We had Payam Bassiam of REI, Path Ahead Ventures there. That's the investment of REI that has the mission of investing in underrepresented founders of color. We have the terrific Charlotte Young Bowen, the founder of Conscious Gear. You know, so the education of their customers there at North Face, there's evidence to support that message, right? And that they're trying to get across to their customers. So they're on very firm ground in terms of their principle, but principle is just never enough these days, as you know. So what I always say, Nadia,
corporations
are where courage goes to die.
No, I think like you raised such great points. Like there was definitely the backlash from conservative rights, right? That this is like quote unquote woke capitalism. I just, what a really interesting, innovative like test to be more socially responsible. Like I've not seen anything like this before. To like incentivize people to learn more about how they can build more awareness or allyship around something that the North Face, you know, values, which is the outdoors. And I, overall, I just think like, what a really cool, ingenious idea. So I'm looking forward to see how it turns out and what the returns are in terms of like number of people that took it, the types of people, the demographic that took this, what the ROI was on it. Like, I would be very curious. So anyone at the North Face who wants to join us, would love for you to join us here on Inclusive Collective. I just think it was a really interesting and brave way to make some change.
And go out and take the course too, right? Get your 20% off, like, right? I'd love to hear what that experience is like as well.
Get that jacket at a discounted rate, you know?
Yeah. It's 20% overpriced. So that's what, you know. All right. Well, thanks for that, Nadia. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we return with Inclusive Collective, we'll be back with Angela R. Howard of Call for Culture. Stay with us. Welcome back to Inclusive Collective, and it's just me. We lost Nadia there at the break, so I get to have all the fun today with our guest, Angela R. Howard. Angela is an organizational psychologist who is passionate about conscious culture building. As the CEO and founder of Call for Culture, she works with leading companies and convenes interdisciplinary change makers across these social systems to drive meaningful and sustainable change by stepping outside of the traditional boundaries of HR. And I love that. She takes a multidisciplinary approach to help companies hone their capabilities and strategies they need to future-proof their organizations and company culture. Angela R. Howard, welcome to the show. So great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rob. And Nadia, if you're listening, hello, nice to meet you. Sad you're not here with us, but you're doing some great things, it sounds like.
She's going to be super sad, too, once she hears this conversation, right?
So have a part two.
Yes, we'll come back. We'll come back. I already know we'll want to have you back. So I want to start big, Angela. I like to start big. You are a cultural consultant. You work with so many businesses, for-profit, non-profit. Can you start at the very high level, 50,000 foot level? Where are we? Is workplace culture getting better? How skilled are leaders now versus, you know, pick a point 5 years ago? How are we doing?
Oh, yeah. The landscape is, I think, changing rapidly. You know, we just came out of, we're still experiencing the aftershocks of a pretty massive event that happened, something small called COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would say a few things are happening. One is people came out of that experience with a fresh perspective on what they will and will not tolerate when it comes to work, a fresh perspective of what work is in the context of their lives. And that is shifting behavior. And so I think one thing that we forget to talk about when we talk about workplace culture is that the work is a system in the ecosystem of other systems, right? So one of the things that I notice working with organizations is work is always on the tail end of societal change. And that's a problem. That means we're being reactive, right? We're not taking into consideration the context around us. We're not applying enough futuristic thinking within our organizations to be able to address these broader contextual changes. So I think leaders are still struggling when it comes to workplace culture, even understanding what it is and what influences it. So are we in a better place? I don't think so. I think there's a lot of people are not investing in DEI efforts right now, culture efforts. They're seeing it as a nice to have, a perk. And I think that's detrimental to the future of our organizations.
So you'd say that the key to creating culture is looking outside of the workplace and seeing things that are coming, things that are around the corner, and starting to take proactive steps. So what? So now I'm curious, what are some of the big things that you're looking at outside of the workplace that people need to be paying attention to?
Yeah, so there are a few, I guess, other systems that I think we need to be, should be signals to us around what the workplace is going to experience. One is, I think, changes in societal norms or paradigms or structures. So we have a new generation coming into the workplace. I'm a millennial and people are still talking about millennials. And I'm like, stop. We are.
Millennials are like 37, right? Like,
yeah, that's my age.
They're not kids. Oh, hey, look at that. Yeah.
Spot on. You know, I'm turning.
They're not kids anymore. I mean,
exactly.
They're kids compared to me, but they're not kids anymore.
Yeah, we have our own kids. We have our own children. We have our own families. We are old news. Gen Z is coming into the workplace and they're already there. They've been there for years. And now we have Gen Alpha right around the corner. So anytime we have a new generation in the workplace, we're talking about, you know, it's kind of the same cycle. You have to think about the progression of how that impacts value systems, beliefs. And we are seeing differences amongst generations in this polarized environment that we're in right now as well. Politics. I know we don't like to talk about politics in the workplace, but we need to. We're in an election year. It's impacting how people are, you know, managing their lives, how they're thinking about their lives, how they're thinking about the types of issues they want to be a part of. And especially this next generation is very focused on, is my organization, do they stand for something?
Right.
So organizations are kind of like a fish out of the water when it comes to this, because it's always been separate, right? Politics, work, we keep those separate. We never the two shall meet.
Yeah.
And then I would think about other systems like the pipeline from education to workplace. We are not preparing our students for the types of skills that are coming. I could talk about this one all day, but there's never a connection between the two systems. You know, I don't think business leaders see their role in the educational system and how it benefits their organization. So those are just a few that contextually are important to the way we shape culture.
Yeah, you're right. We could go on each of those. We could do a whole show on each of those. Cool. So we'll have you back next week.
Yeah. Perfect.
But so talk about HR, right? You talk about stepping outside the traditional boundaries of HR.
Yes.
And so as you're talking about seeing around corners, HR doesn't do a great job of that, right? Like, not always. I guess I'm being a little bit harsh there. But so what does it mean to you to step outside the boundaries of HR? Is it just thinking just more broadly?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, and people will maybe not love to hear this, but I don't think this work belongs in HR. HR as strategic as they can be. I was in HR, right? My last role before I started my business was a chief people officer. I've held that role, but my role was to also integrate this into the capability of the leadership team. And I'm not sure if a lot of HR folks are thinking that way. They're thinking of, well, this is my work, so I'm going to keep it and I'm going to manage it. My role is to work myself out of a job. And I think more of HR folks need to think that way. And I think they need to be working across disciplines within the organization to create the sustainable change that's needed. So that's why, you know, we bring in, with our methodology, we bring in anthropology, we bring in neuroscience, we bring in sociology, we bring in economics. Like, these are structural changes that require much more than just one department within an organization.
Right. Yeah. And put that in the context of DEI as well, right? So how do you think about the last 4 years, where we've been, where we're going in terms of integration of diversity, equity, inclusion within culture? Any thoughts on how that's going to look going forward?
I fear for DEI, I guess, as a whole. I mean, you know, we're seeing a backlash around it. At the end of the day, we're really talking about value systems, right? And I think we love some good marketing. We love to brand things. We love to capitalize on that branding. And as you know, the people who are really doing DEI work are doing systems and behavior change work.
Right.
Call it what you'd like, but you know, we're working within organizations to create value systems that are inclusive and focus on justice and humanity and people and are people-centered, right? Yeah. And that includes things like inclusive leadership, that includes things like equitable process, that includes ensuring we have representation and the right voices in the room. And that has been shaped as DEI. And I think it's important that we name the things, but I do think we've unfortunately gotten to a point where DEI has been branded and there are people who are for it and are against it, versus thinking more holistically about what are we actually doing when we say we're doing DEI? Like, what are the initiatives and the behaviors that we're baking into our value system and the fabric of our organization to make it better and to make it a safe space for all people?
Yeah. No, I love that. And I love that you called out that, you know, in its purest form, not many people can be against equity and inclusion, but we've lost control of the narrative here a little bit in the last. And so, and maybe we'll get it back at some point as well, right? These things tend to ebb and flow. So let's talk about some things that you're doing, particularly the Culture Impact Lab, May 15th and 16th, Chicago. I love it, not just because I'll be there, but I've been thinking about this recently. We don't challenge the way things are done enough, obviously in business, for sure, right? We take things for granted, the way things have always been done. But even little things like, how is a conference supposed to work? How are people getting together and events supposed to work? And so tell me about your vision for Culture Impact Lab. Let's start there. Where did this come from?
Yeah, so it's twofold. One is, you know, I am also on the speaking circuit, as you are, and probably Nadia, it sounds like she is off doing her thing. And to be honest, I stopped going to conferences unless I was speaking, mainly because I felt like I was going there for two reasons. One was to collect business cards and posture. And two was to listen to people speak, but not in any kind of coherent fashion. And yes, some of the speakers were really fantastic and I got great insight and I was inspired, but I literally couldn't take those learnings back and do something with them. And I got so frustrated because I'm like, the world is burning right now. Why are we not spending our time in spaces and communities that are going to drive some kind of action? Like, I want to take back a plan that I can then bring back to my practice or my organization. Right. So that was, I mean, I was just fed up on that from that perspective. The other part was I wanted to create an experience that was kind of a DIY version of what we do within organizations. I wanted to scale our methodology. I wanted more people to have their hands on it so that more organizations can be impacted. So the Culture Impact Lab is essentially a two-day event where participants will bring a problem statement. So we will help them through, and you're going to be helping us with some of that, determine what is the workplace culture challenge that they have. They're going to bring that to the lab. They're going to hear from experts and they're going to work with experts. But half of the time, 50% of the time, they're going to be in workshop, actually building an action plan and a blueprint that they can bring back to their organizations.
Right, right. So there are speakers, but those speakers are then going to come off the stage and into the lab and work with folks that are participating, right?
Exactly.
Which is, yeah, which is really fun. Could be scary, you know, depending on who that speaker is. And so who would benefit the most from this, Angela? Who's the person that's going to walk away and this is going to change their life?
Yeah. So we are welcoming anyone within organizations that has decision-making oversight around workplace culture efforts. That could be DEI focus, innovation focus, performance focus, anything around transformation and change. The other participant that I think would find value in the event is anyone who's within an organization who doesn't have the decision-making rights, but has a strong calling to change their organization. This might be someone who's in an ERG, a BRG, they're a culture champion, or they're just somebody within the organization who has a strong need for justice and change.
Right.
That person is going to be on our change maker track, which will be more about building a business case that they can bring to their organization. We're also would love to have some intact teams. So we've structured this also as like a kind of out of the box retreat event that you could send your leadership team or your ERG team to. And, you know, it kind of takes out some of the guesswork if you're trying to create a kickoff experience or a structured container for that group to really take some action back into your organization.
Amazing. Yeah. And we're going to have fun too, right? Like it's going to be life changing for us
right? It's going to be amazing.
All right. I'm not very good. We don't do a lot of plugs here. So how do we get in on this? There's still, I assume, space available.
Yeah, there is limited space. So it is a small event. And we structured it that way. It's going to be about 100 people. And so we have some slots open. If you go to callforculture.com and click Culture Impact Lab, you should be able to register. Or if you have funding challenges, we also have scholarships available. And we do have sponsorship opportunities if you wanted to sponsor somebody to attend the lab who wouldn't otherwise have the funding to do so.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks for that. Angela, let's wrap it up here. I'd love to hear, do you have any, besides the Culture Impact Lab, any resources that you would recommend to our audience? Things that you're just really excited about sharing with folks that want to transform their culture?
Yeah, I have two books that I have here that I would love to highlight.
All right. So
the first things first, if you want to improve your DEI workplace culture transformation initiatives within your organization, my first piece of advice is to read books, listen to podcasts that are published by people of color, right? Or people who are usually in your orbit. Both of these books are written by women of color. The first one is Mita Malik called Reimagine Inclusion.
Former guest of the show. Yeah.
Amazing. Perfect. Yeah. Already talked about this. Great practical steps to creating more inclusive workplaces, but also just kind of busting some myths about actions that people are doing that actually aren't making an impact. The other book is from a Black author. Her name is, and a good friend of mine, her name is L'Oreal Thompson-Payton. She's here in the Chicagoland area. And definitely would recommend not just reading DEI books, but also books that are written by women of color about their lived experience, right? So not all marginalized people write about DEI. We also write about our lived experiences, how we see the world, how we experience the world. And so this is called Stop Waiting for Perfect, Step Out of Your Comfort Zone and Into Your Power by L'Oreal. Highly recommend.
I love it. That is one I have not read, so I'm excited about that one as well. So, well, Angela Arhart, thanks so much for that. It was great to have you. Can't wait to hang out with you in May in Chicago. And definitely check out callforculture.com and the Culture Impact Lab. And maybe we'll come back and hit some of those other culture topics that we hit earlier at some point.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Loved it. Yep. Great to see you. Thanks so much, Angela. All right, welcome back, everyone. Nadia, so good to see you again. So good to have you back. We just finished our conversation with Angela R. Howard. How jealous are you?
Yeah, I know. I'm so sorry that I missed the conversation. What a great conversation it was, though. I hope we can have Angela back soon. What were your thoughts? Any takeaways?
Lots of great stuff from Angela. And again, I think it was great to have that perspective of the integration between culture and DEI, mm-hmm. and basically, you know, the Venn diagram of those two things fit together really well.
Sure.
So really excited to work with them in Chicago in May. And so we'll talk about that again. I'm sure I'll plug that again on the way to May, but very excited to have Angela on.
Absolutely.
What do we got today?
Well, today I'm ranting. So it's a light rant. So last week, the Wall Street Journal shared that companies are starting to consider and either eliminating coverage entirely or restricting how employees can access weight loss medications. Employees who take weight loss drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy may soon have to pay out of pocket as their employer decides to limit coverage. It's an effort to really cut costs, pointing to both the cost of the drugs and the company's observations that employees were not always effectively using the medications. And this move kind of comes as many pharmaceutical companies have raised the prices of drugs such as Ozempic and Mounjaro. There's a lot of people that need that medication too. So it's just sad overall.
Yeah, I was thinking about this in terms of the pandemic, right? And so, right, think about producing those vaccines, the amount of resources that were marshaled in terms of being able to produce vaccines. And mm-hmm. and this is somewhat of a supply problem as well, right? And so you just think about it, this is something that is a real issue for a lot of folks. And we don't necessarily take it as seriously as we do other things. And mm-hmm. we make it difficult for people that really need these drugs and medications. I guess you could say that for a lot of drugs and medications that people really need, mm-hmm. we make it really hard to obtain them. So thanks for that. So very worthy rant. We could probably do that one every week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about something fun. Let's talk about the Wolverine Company.
Okay.
This is a company that makes work boots, I'm told. As you know, I'm a little too delicate for that sort of thing. But the Wolverine has launched the Woman Made campaign, Nadia, that spotlights the accomplishments of women in skilled trades mm-hmm. and looks to build a more inclusive future in those trades for them. So to boost the effort, the brand launched a change.org petition. I think you can go to change.org or Wolverine website to add the term woman made to the dictionary, and then partnered with HGTV and the nonprofit Girls Garage. So this is fun, right?
That's
so I'm
really
very excited
fun.
About that.
Yeah,
this March. Can't imagine anyone would have a problem with it, calling attention to the contribution of women in skilled trades. And it is a very male dominated industry and also great opportunities for folks in there. So definitely really appreciate the work that they're doing there. All right, Nadia, that's it for Inclusive Collective. Just a reminder that are you looking for DE&I and workplace culture strategy, consulting, problem solving, or training? You can reach Nadia at nadia@nazconsultants.com and rob@tecanoconsulting.com. You just heard about the call for Culture Impact Lab, May 15th. And 16th in Chicago. I'll be speaking at that and facilitating. If you're interested, go to callforculture.com. You can use code ROBHADLEY300 for $300 off. I'm also doing a LinkedIn Live today, March 12th at 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific. We're doing part two about how you can use data in your organization to protect yourself and drive equity in the workplace. We have a real lawyer on the show, Nadia. You know, I'm a fake lawyer. and so looking forward to that. Jacqueline Harani will join us. So tune in for that or look for the replay on LinkedIn, on YouTube.
Very cool. Lots going on. Well, thanks for that, Rob. Inclusive Collective is a production of Aphelion Media and edited by Ari Mathay. We would love to hear from you folks. So please send us your feedback at inclusivecollective@aphelion.com. You can also find us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. But also follow us on LinkedIn so you can subscribe to our Inclusive Collective newsletter. If you like what you heard, please be sure to subscribe and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. We like 5 stars. Thank you again to our guest, Angela R. Howard, of Call for Culture. We will be back next week. Be well.
Thanks, Nadia.
Thank you. Go.